This is CliffCentral.com.
Please note that the views expressed and the advice provided in this show are for general advice and entertainment purposes only. Nothing stated should be treated as a substitute for your own independent legal advice based on your own specific facts and objectives. Therefore, the presenter and CliffCentral.com accept no liability of any nature whatsoever, either expressed or implied.
Law. Like you've never heard it before. The Laws of Life with Gary Hertzberg on CliffCentral.com.
I'm Gary Hertzberg, and this is the Laws of Life on CliffCentral.com. Alongside me today is Lionel Makokotlela. Welcome, Lions.
Dumela, Gary, and Dumela to our podcasters and to each and every single person listening to us.
On today's show, we chat about the law on immigration for foreigners who are desperate to live and work in South Africa, and there are millions of them.
Mm.
We also talk about the law for those South Africans who want to push off and live elsewhere, and for those who don't know whether they're coming or going.
Should I stay or should I go now? Should I stay or should I go now? Should I stay or should I go now?
I want to go to Germany.
Lionel, you're staying exactly where you are. Joining us in studio today is an attorney who definitely knows the law on coming and going. He's a specialist immigration lawyer. Welcome, Chris Waters.
Gary, thanks very much. Good to
Excellent.
Be here again.
Yeah. W-A-T-T-E-R-S, your practice is in Bedford View. Bedford View.
Yeah, Bedford View.
Johannesburg.
You must be doing very well in Bedford View.
Occasionally.
Yeah, oh. I'm sure he is. Some of the questions we'll be answering today have been posted by members of our collaborative partner, Legal Talk South Africa, with its Facebook following of over 133,000 members.
And growing every time, if I may add.
Our Facebook page, The Laws of Life with Gary Hertzberg. Have a look, give us a like if you would like to. And our Twitter handle lines.
It's Hertzlaw, H-E-R-T-Z-L-A-W.
You got it right.
This time around.
Let's talk to Chris Waters, immigration attorney. Chris, there's so much I want to talk to you about. I'm going to just fire away and see how we go. I remember earlier this year, according to a report, it was reported that Cabinet has approved a piece of legislation. It's not law yet. It just went through Cabinet that would allow the Department of Home Affairs to put a trace on all South African citizens planning to leave the country for more than 3 months.
Hmm.
It's a bit scary, that. Is that in fact so?
Gary, now I think that what the paper has picked up is that in the latest green paper on migration, the department proposes that it should keep close relations with South Africa's diaspora, with the communities around the world, to learn from them, to encourage them to come back, to continue to liaise with them. There's no detail as to how this will work in practice. This is just it's a theoretical thing. Mm. It happens in other countries. Do it. They kind of, as I say, they work with their diaspora communities, so that's pretty much how that's the principle of it at this point.
Nothing sinister about that. That they're keeping tabs on us, what we're doing, where we are.
That might be the a kind of a. The undertone, as it were, but in principle, it looks legitimate.
Chris, let's help me with this one. When assuming I'm leaving from Dubai, I left South Africa on holiday. I'm back, coming back via Dubai on Emirates. I'm not plugging for them for any reason. And what happens to the information that goes into the system at in Dubai?
the current legislation provides for support to what's called the Advanced Passenger Information System. This is a database that requires every airline, when a flight closes, to present a report to Home Affairs with a list of details about each passenger. There's about 40 or 50 different items of information on the report, dealing with your seat number, your bag measurements, your flying patterns, how you pay for your tickets, the weight of your bags, dimensions of your bags, etc. So it gives the gives Home Affairs a profile of the passenger, and then when the doors of the plane closes, the same report gets updated and sent again. So that in principle, Home Affairs officials tell me that when the doors close in Dubai or in Heathrow, they know who they're going to take off that plane when it arrives in South Africa. It's at this point in time, it works particularly well, I'm told, in terms of tracking the movements of drug traffickers, but obviously has ramifications in terms of, you know, anti-terrorism measures.
You said something earlier. You said it knows how I paid for my ticket.
Yes.
And that information is then sent back to South Africa. If, assuming I paid in cash, I mean, does that go to SARS? Where does that information go?
I don't know who else Home Affairs shares it with. Mm. The legislation says that the department can share it with any other department or any other person or agency that has a right to it. So I will let you draw your conclusions as to what happens there.
So you are saying that every bit of information on where I've been on that trip is actually sent back to South Africa. They know where I've been.
I think in theory it would cover that. It would allow them to pick that up. But it's part of a larger, again, from the department's perspective, and again, this is also dealt with in the new green paper. The idea is to move from or move to a sort of a regime where we individually profile travelers, or the country individually profiles travelers, rather than saying, you know, because you're from Canada or Australia, we trust you, but rather allowing them to as I say, to individually profile people and pick up who's a risky traveler and who's a safe traveler. Mm-hmm. It will allow you to detect that, you know, the guy flying in from Nigeria is in fact a good guy with a good profile, as opposed to, you know, somebody with a riskier profile who, you know, flies through Colombia and Brazil and other strange destinations, without wanting to say anything nasty about Colombia or Brazil.
This is a kind of tantamount to a bit of spying on us, and surely it's against our privacy laws if there are such things in this regard.
I think the problem in this country is we don't have a great history of being very protective of our privacy rights, you know, given where we've come from. Privacy always seems to me to be not as high on the agenda as, say, dignity and liberty.
Yeah. Chris, if people want to immigrate, there are a lot of youngsters that have just had enough of corruption and crime, and they just want to go somewhere else. Can they just up and go, or do they have to notify anyone they're immigrating, or how does it work officially?
There's no formal process for, let's say, formal immigration, other than in terms of if you want to move your assets, you know, move large amounts of money out of the country because you've now settled in Australia. Mm-hmm. And you want your pension and you want to kind of sell up your roles and your large house in Sandton, and you want to get that money out of the country legally, you then have to approach SARS to get a final tax clearance to get permission to get those funds out of the country.
Yes.
But if you're kind of young and mobile and you kind of up and leave and settle down in the US or the UK or Europe, there's no way actually for the Home Affairs to pick up that you actually have left. It's just that you haven't come back. Mm. So it's
if it's I get not another regulated. Passport overseas, they wouldn't even know it's the same person, or would they?
Unfortunately, in Turnbull, I say unfortunately from the department's perspective, it can be very hard to pick up that if a person leaves on passport X and returns on passport Y, it's hard to pick up that it's the same person.
Yeah.
Sometimes the systems do pick it up, and other times they actually don't know.
Yeah. So if someone's trying to escape something, they leave, they apply for a new passport saying they've lost theirs, but surely the embassy in the country in which they're applying would notify, wouldn't there be a cross-reference?
The Well, the passports get issued here. They don't get issued in at the embassies.
Yeah.
But the extent of communication and kind of sharing of databases between embassies and Home Affairs is not the best, unfortunately.
Someone has written to us about their waiter at one of their favorite restaurants who's originally from Zimbabwe, and apparently this person from Zimbabwe has been in the country for 7 or 8 years. In our World Cup year, I think it's 2010, he got the special dispensation, I think it's called, a special permit, allowing him to be there in South Africa for 7 years. And that seems to expire now in 2017. Are our Zimbabwean friends, the waiters and the people that work in our homes, and I'm not talking about the very successful Zimbabweans, of which there are millions in South Africa, but those that are working within, you know, households and that, are they in danger of being sent back?
So, yeah, this profile isn't quite accurate. What happened was that in 2010, in response to the kind of huge numbers of Zimbabweans who fled Zim collapsing in the late noughties, the refugee system got was packed with people applying for refugee status and from Zim. Mm-hmm. I mean, literally at one point we had, South Africa was the biggest recipient of refugees in the world in 1 year.
So may I interrupt and ask what a refugee is in law?
Okay.
Yeah.
A refugee is a person who is fleeing his country, his or her country, on the basis of that they are being persecuted, or either on account of their politics, their religion, their social orientation, their gender, ethnic origins. Mm. There's a finite list of grounds.
Yeah.
And if they can show that they face harm on return and that their country can't or won't protect them, then we have South Africa has a duty to then offer protection to that person.
Yes.
And if the person confirms that story, he or she is then deemed to be a refugee.
Mm.
Prior to that, they are considered to be asylum seekers. So that's the difference between an asylum seeker and a refugee is the refugee has been formally recognized as a refugee.
So it's basically the same thing. One is applying and the other has been granted. Okay, so the Zimbabweans came in as refugees.
As asylum seekers.
And then they became refugees.
That was the problem, is that the system was kind of creaking with all these volumes and no one could cope with the numbers.
Yes.
So they came up with the idea of granting a temporary dispensation to Zimbabweans who were here either to work or to study.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of a blank check to do whatever work they could get their hands on.
Mm-hmm.
And it was granted for 4 years. They were all granted for 4 years. And then at the end of 2014, Cabinet decided to issue a new dispensation to Zimbabweans, and that was called the ZSP permit. This first one was called a DZP. There's a legal reason. They didn't want to create an expectation that your visa would be renewed, so they changed the name.
Okay.
So you had a DZP, now you can apply, and if you're approved, we'll give you a ZSP.
Mm.
Those ZSPs all expire on the 31st of December this year, 2017, and Cabinet announced last month that in August, that the affected Zimbabweans could apply for the new permit, which is called a ZEP.
Yes.
And that will be valid for another 3 or 4 years.
Is that an automatic? Will it be automatically?
Yeah, they have to formally apply and put in the details, and police checks are run on each person. So they're disqualified if there are any criminal convictions.
Mm. How do you feel about that, Lance?
It's going to be quite an interesting one because we know that the police takes time in terms of verifying any fingerprints. So I wonder how long this project is going to take.
Have they set up? They've set up something for
it. It's running already.
Okay.
It's Home Affairs uses this so front of house service VFS they have dedicated offices for the Zimbabwean applications. The police clearances are not taking long, actually. You know, if you apply privately, you'll get a police clearance in 2 to 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Home Affairs was supposed to be setting up a real-time check with the police, but I don't know how far that's got, but that shouldn't be a major issue.
Just for a bit of information, useless information, the population of Zimbabwe is approximately 16 million. The population of South Africa is about 56 million. And the most populated country in Africa is Nigeria with 178 million, which is massive, isn't it?
Wow.
America's got about 300 million. Yeah, I mean, it would be outrageous to expect a quarter of a million people to go back to Zimbabwe right now with Mr. Mugabe having taken a lot of the money for himself and his cronies.
Yeah, well, I mean, quite aside from that, to take, 220-odd thousand people out of the economy is like the one of the complaints about what Mr. Trump is doing in the States. You can't take a whole large number out of the economy.
Absolutely.
It actually has, people buy the bread, the sugar, the meals, etc. Mm. People's businesses are massively supported by these people. So it would be a huge knock for them to leave. So the other thing I must just mention is, as part of the new announcement, one of the conditions for these visas, these permits, is that the holder is not allowed to change that permit from inside the country. So in other words, if they get married to a South African, they cannot move to a spousal visa from inside the country. They've got to leave the country and kind of cancel the special permit they've got and apply for the correct immigration permit back in Harare. So that's a condition that attaches to the permit, and also that this period of time they spend in country will not qualify them for permanent residence. So it's you're in a holding pattern throughout this period.
Risky.
It has its problems.
Yes.
So the other aspect that was mentioned was that there's a very small window has been opened as an exception to the exception. That if any Zimbabwean on a ZSP qualifies for an ordinary immigration visa, they've been given permission to apply from inside the country to change to that ordinary immigration visa, and that window closes at the end of November.
Which is now.
So they've got about 8 weeks to change the visas, which is or at least to get the applications.
Are you assisting people with this?
Yes, we are.
Yeah. Okay. If you're Zimbabwean and you're looking to change your visa to get to stabilize, really.
Yeah. So in other words, if you've, we'll give you a case in point. We've got a young man who came here, and this is a wonderful anti-xenophobic story. Young man came here in the early noughties with nothing but the shirt on his back, but very good kind of sales type person. And he got given an opportunity in a company, and he has now become the MD of the company. He's increased, it's in the artisan field. He's increased employment in the company from sort of 25 staff to 50. He's quadrupled the turnover of the company, and he's one of these ZSP permit. So we're going to move him to a business visa so that his presence here isn't as kind of risky.
Yeah. Well, that's great.
But I mean, this is kind of you often hear people saying, "Well, every foreign national means one less job." Mm. This guy has created; he's saved 25 jobs, and he's created another 25 jobs. Just one person.
That's great. It's a beautiful story.
It is. Lovely. Yeah. We talk of 220,000 people who are they're going to get their permits extended. We're in South Africa right now. We have between 1 million and 3 million Zimbabweans that live in South Africa that have permits. On what basis are they here?
It can be any number of options. They could be here as spouses of South Africans. They could be on legitimate business visas, work visas, what they call critical skills visas. You get here on study visas, so there's any number of legitimate reasons to for them to be here.
Yeah.
I think one of the problems that was triggered by the dispensation, when one of the purposes of the dispensation, it wasn't just to clear the refugee program, but it was to encourage Zimbabweans who had, let's say, embedded themselves in South Africa on false documents. to come out of the woodwork to help clear up the population register so that it was just South Africans who were on the population register.
Yeah.
So there was an amnesty. So if you had a false ID, you could come forward and say, here's my false ID, here's my false birth certificate, you know, and please legitimate me, legitimize me. And they then got these ZSPs. The problem with that, some people discovered, was that the amnesty was from Home Affairs. If you had a bond, a 25-year bond with some of the commercial banks, they suddenly found out that their good client was no longer a South African here for life, but a Zimbabwean who was here for 4 years or 3 months. And there have been cases of the banks kind of moving against those people saying, sell your property or we're prosecuting you.
Yes.
So there was no incentive for people for these embedded cases to come out of the woodwork, because where it really hurt them was in, you know, they had their whole lives built around these false documents, and there's, you know, the private sector doesn't get kind of bought into this amnesty process. And so, you know, we still get instructions from people who are saying, look, I've been here for 20 years and I need to get this sorted out.
Chris, what about all the wonderful Malawians that are in South Africa? What's their status?
Well, the idea is that this type of amnesty will be rolled out to other SADC countries. It has been rolled out to Lesotho. And it will be, we're told, over time, be rolled out to other SADC states, as and when they're kind of confident that they can manage that flow.
Mm-hmm.
So there may well be hope for the Malawians and the Mozambicans, but there's no timeline on this at all.
Yeah, I think you mentioned earlier that the department uses a company called VFS Global Service. Who is that?
VFS is a...
And what do they do? Yeah.
The initials VFS literally mean Visa Facilitation Service.
Yeah.
And it's an Indian company. Well, it started off as an Indian company. It's now Swiss-based. And they offer the same service around the globe. They act, I think at the last check I was looking the other day, they represent about 50 different countries. So if you apply, say, for a visa for Norway, you will go to the VFS. I'm not advertising VFS. I'm just...
No, it's the way it is.
You will go to the VFS office in something in Pretoria, where they will receive the documents and they then pass it on to the embassy, and then the result comes back to that office and they pick it up. The benefit, and it applies equally to South Africa, the supposed benefit is that it cuts out the public engaging or interfacing with the department, and therefore kind of rules out a lot of corruption, because there's no longer kind of money passing over the counter. And also these VFS offices have extensive security. You know, there's, if you blink, cameras go off. So everybody has to go through military level clearances and so on and so forth, and they move their staff around the country. Mm-hmm.
I think it works.
I mean, it has problems every so often. I mean, like the systems have been down for the last couple of days, but by and large we find it works, and the clients are happier because you go to kind of clean offices and polite staff, and they have business lounge services, etc. So by and large it does seem to work.
Have you worked with them, Lance?
No,
VFS.
No.
Yeah. Initially, in the very beginning, I thought it was maybe a money-making exercise, but I see it's a worldwide thing, this.
Yes, yeah. The suspicion was it had links to somebody or else, but...
Yeah, because it was Indian origin. The origin was from India, unfortunately.
But it predates something else.
Yeah. Let's talk about... there's something someone wanted to know. Someone from one of the neighboring states was involved in a motor collision. They got a road accident fund certificate, which enables them to get future treatment from the hospitals, etc. How does that work if they've got to go back, or how does it work with?
Well, the where we have been brought in is particularly dealing with Zimbabweans, is kind of given the unfortunate state of the public health system or the health system generally in Zimbabwe, it's becomes well, as in one of the cases it brought to us, they said it would be a death sentence to send the guy, to expect the guy to go back and receive the treatment he needs for his injuries in Zim, and that instead he should be allowed to remain in South Africa. And so what we've had to do is engage with the department and try and sort out visas for, you know, I mean, and some of these guys can be, you know, entirely unskilled, who've been here illegally. And, you know, one of the issues was, you know, should we be treating them? Should they be getting benefits if they weren't supposed to be in the country at all, etc.? So I think they've got past that. And the problem has been, you know, if you send them back, and are there delays in the RAF paying the claim, or if RAF repudiates the claim and they have to litigate, they must litigate from Zimbabwe.
Yeah, terrible.
And they've got to put in security, you know, security
so
deposits.
So that helped you get their permits?
So, yeah, so we help get them, try and get them sorted out and stay in the country.
Chris, we have a question from Gail Lawrence. She's a Legal Talk South African poster. She said, what is the procedure if a South African wants to marry an asylum seeker?
This is quite a thorny issue, which has arisen in recent months. There are we're getting reports. We've had quite a few reports in recent months that Home Affairs officials are refusing to allow asylum seekers to marry South Africans.
Can they do that?
I think it's highly
constitutional.
Illegal. Yeah,
it sounds very
unconstitutional. I think the department's rationale is that if they allow them to marry, then in terms of an old constitutional court ruling, the department has to respect the South African's choice or right to family life and the right to choose their partner. And the same Concord ruling recognized or kind of clarified that you can't expect the person to leave the foreign national to leave the country and apply for a visa from outside the country.
Yes.
So this would kind of undermine the whole idea of, you know, if you've had enough of your asylum thing, you must leave if you want to stay in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
So I heard just this morning, in fact, that an NGO is planning on launching a high court challenge to the legality of this practice. So that there should be a change. But right now they are in fact apparently saying we're not allowed to marry.
Strange. I hope that application succeeds. There was a reply from a man called Rhino, R-Y-N-O. He says, I'd like to advise you contact Home Affairs to see if the asylum is valid, because I get a lot of employees, he's probably in HR, reporting to our offices and all of them are fake. I mean, are these fake certificates, are there fake certificates around?
Yes, sadly, there is quite a sort of traffic in false or fake asylum seeker permits. It certainly is a problem. It used to be very hard to do, but we've also we get approached by companies asking us to kind of to check on the legality of these permits. But yes, unfortunately, it is a growing problem.
Is it, Chris? Is it correct that if an employer doesn't verify that the permit or the visa, whatever it is legal, the employer can be prosecuted?
Yes, the employer has to show he's taken reasonable steps to ensure the person is he's legally allowed to work in the Republic. There's no definition of what constitutes reasonable steps.
What do you think the employer should do? What advice would you give a client of yours?
Well, I think what we there's two types of steps. you know, if an employer looks at a person's work visa or asylum seeker visa and says, and it looks legitimate, I mean, there is a legal presumption, you know, that anything that, that appears to be, was it omnia praesumpta or something?
Something like that.
Yeah. That anything that appears to be what it is what it is. It needs to be recognized. You can't run commerce and industry on the basis of having to question every document, assuming that it's fake. You know, but if you get an asylum seeker permit that's kind of handwritten and you've got kind of pidgin English, and I've seen that happen, yes, I think you get alerted. The alternative is that one can engage the department and say, look, we've got these permits, we've got these visas, etc. Can you tell us whether they are valid or not? So one can, and I think for particularly for companies who don't want to run the risk of
being prosecuted,
or you know, having that hassle, it's worth taking those extra steps.
Mm-hmm. If you look at a fake certificate, how different is it from a legit?
Well, it depends. You can get very, very sophisticated fakes and, you know, very, very bad fakes. There's no given format.
Yeah. Chris, so many of us brag about holding second passports without really understanding the possible legal implications. Talk to us about people with two passports.
The Citizenship Act provides that if you acquire a second, if you're a South African and you acquire a second citizenship without first obtaining the permission of Home Affairs to do so, then you're deemed to have lost your citizenship automatically.
Of South Africa.
Of South Africa, yeah. Mm. Now, there's different, globally, there are sort of three different systems of citizenship management, as it were. So some, and the world's kind of largely divided into those who allow dual citizenship, or three or four or five. There are those that are strictly prohibited. Mm-hmm. And then it's somewhere in the middle, like South Africa, where it's allowed but with permission. Mm-hmm. The problem with the wording of the legislation is that the stripping of citizenship happens automatically by operation of law. So if you acquire it, you lose it.
So sorry, Chris, assuming I go to Mauritius and I get a passport there, or Portugal or Lithuania or wherever.
Yeah.
Okay. If I don't get permission from South Africa, I lose my South African citizenship. And I'm only want to, I just want that second passport because it's nice to have, but I don't want to live there. I want to live here.
Yeah.
But I'm going to lose my citizenship. I've got to be hell of a careful.
Yes, it depends on how, I mean, there's any number of ways in which it can come out. Mm. I mean, there are ways, one shouldn't say this, but
of hiding it.
There are ways of hiding it.
Yeah.
When you apply for a new South African passport, you are asked, have you obtained another passport, another citizenship? So if you say no.
Is that under oath I'm saying no, or I can't remember?
I can't remember. I don't think it's under oath. If you say no, it's impossible for Home Affairs to
know I got a Lithuanian passport.
Yeah, or, you know.
Whatever.
From wherever, yeah.
Yeah. If they do find out.
If you, as I say, it can come out, you know, if for example, you arrive at Tambo, you fly in, and you've got.
By mistake, I give my Lithuanian.
No, so you've got your South African passport, you've got an exit stamp from South Africa.
Yes.
But you haven't got an entry stamp into anywhere else.
Yeah.
That tends to flag that you've.
Where have you been?
You'd be flying around.
Yeah.
It was a long flight.
Yes, you fly for 3 months. Yeah.
So you know it can come to light at that point in time. The question will then be: well, what did you enter on? Now, if you have a legitimate, you've got a UK passport, for example. Mm. Now, the part of the problem is that. You can have people who were citizens of another country who have naturalized here. Now, they're not hit by that ban because it's South Africans who acquire another nationality.
Yes, yes.
Not, you know, so if you're a UK citizen and you come here and you naturalize, there's nothing wrong with you having two passports. So, you know, you can have, it can cause questions at airports and in all sorts of other places as to, you know.
Practically, assuming that I have a British passport, because my parents, one of them was born there, and I have a South African, what's the effect of that?
Well, as I say, it depends on that scenario. Are you South African first?
Yes, South African first. Yes.
Well, as I say, you're deemed to have lost it automatically. The problem arises in working out when that happened. We've seen cases where people didn't. Many people don't realize that there is this ban, so they lose they've automatically lost their citizenship. But in the meantime,
but that's an absolute tragedy.
Well, it can be.
Yeah.
But you can then have children, and you register them as South Africans.
Yes.
Because Home Affairs doesn't know you've lost.
But it
can come out, as I say, in any number of ways. Mm. And then we've had cases where Home Affairs have written to us and said, well, your client lost his South African citizenship, and therefore his children aren't South African.
Okay, so Chris, the answer is, before, if you're South African with a South African passport, before you apply for another passport, you've got to get permission from South Africa.
Yes.
How do you do that? Is it a formality?
It's a formality.
It's a nothing.
I've never heard it being refused.
Who does it? Do I do it, or do I go to a lawyer to do it?
You do it yourself. You can go to a lawyer to do it. It's better to do it yourself.
Where do I go to Home Affairs website and see where? How do I do this?
Yeah, well, you go into the. It's easiest because Home Affairs doesn't put their forms on the websites anymore. Mm. So you go into the district, one of the district offices, Randburg or. Alex or wherever like that, and you say you're applying for a what they call a retention letter, and it's a fairly straightforward process, and usually you'll get an answer in a couple of months.
So it's an absolute essential if you're applying for a second passport of another country, please make sure you get permission here. Otherwise, you'll lose your citizenship. It's crazy, isn't it?
True.
Yeah.
But the other aspect is that that permission is specific to that country. So if you then move on to get another citizenship, you've got to ask permission again in respect to that third country.
Yeah.
Wow. We just got a message from WhatsApp and just says it's quite fascinating. And they didn't know anything about the passport issues as well as much of immigration laws. So it's quite interesting.
Quick question, we're going to be running out of time soon. Immigration matters. Should I do it myself or should I see an attorney? You are an immigration attorney. I mean, you're obviously going to say see an attorney, but should I really? I mean, when should I see an attorney?
I advise people, particularly, you know, for example, if you're going to emigrate, if you want to go to the US or the UK, the laws, you know, each country has its own collection of laws, of directives, of rules, of policies, of practices, etc. And it's a nightmare. So it's an absolute nightmare to you know, minefield. You know, if you're applying to the US for a visa, you know, in US law, they will assume you're planning on staying in the US. So if you're young and mobile and you want to go to Las Vegas, I shouldn't say that anymore. Sorry, if you're going to go somewhere for a holiday, the assumption is going to be that you're planning on staying there. Mm. So you really have to put together a good and comprehensive case on why you want to get back. And so it's important to get kind of guidance on what constitutes, you know, good reasons. What works for the Americans as being good reasons. Mm. Similarly, if you're kind of trying to get into the UK, if your application is refused, in most cases there's no appeal. Unlike South Africa,
the end of that.
It's the end of it. But that refusal then starts counting against you. So if you get refused once, twice, three times, you're running into trouble. So we may have a vested interest, but it's important to understand what are the rules, what are the practices, what are the processes.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing here. You know, we often get, just this morning, before I came here, we had a corporate client in the overseas that was sending staff in on what they call business visas for a week's visit. And I said, well, if you're sending employees in for a week's visit, that's not a business visit. As far as Home Affairs is concerned, that's a working visit.
Yes.
And your guy's coming in on the wrong visa and can be arrested and deported. And people have been arrested and deported. You've got to get... and, you know, the person I was talking to said, well, I met a guy in the business class lounge of the airport, and he told me.
He's got to be right. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Immigration law is very tricky. There are very few lawyers that do it. I think there are a handful of you, aren't there?
Well, there's very few of us who do it full time. There are a lot of colleagues. I do the training for the Law Society, and when I first did the seminars, we had about 20 people. And then most recently, we had over 200.
Yeah, wow. Really? Lawyers?
Attorneys,
that
yes.
That you're training?
Yeah.
Good on you. Yeah. Excellent. They need it. That's the voice of Chris Waters, Watters. He's not in Bloemfontein. He's in Bedford View. Specialist immigration attorney. It's been so interesting. We've picked up a few things that we've got to be careful of.
Oh, no, interesting. Glad.
Many thanks for joining us. Please don't go away to our listeners, because after this, we have a couple who were nearly hijacked. And their story went worldwide. There were 11 million views of the security footage. You're going to stay for that one, Chris, if you can. Many thanks for being with us. Lines to you. Thank you very much. And to you, our listener, thanks for listening. Cheers till next.
Thanks very much.
This is CliffCentral.com.